steps 4 and 5. Our speakers are Peter C. and Lucy C. Our first speaker is Lucy C. And I'll turn it over.
Hello, family. My name is Lucy, and I'm a grateful recovering addict. And first and foremost, I want to thank the God of my understanding for his grace and mercy. And I want to thank you all for coming here tonight, participating in your recovery and helping me through mine. And on steps 4 and 5 here, I'm going to get right to it. But before I get to it, I want to tell you that I'm an addict that's been clean since... My clean date is April 26, 1990. Yeah. And I still do what was asked of me to do to stay here. I make meetings. I stay involved in the fellowship. I do service from the heart. I love what I do. I love everybody in here. I love everybody. I love the fact that we're like a worldwide fellowship. We're full of colors. Beautiful. You know, I love it, you know. And when I came in here, before I came in here, I want to say that I used for 14 years of my life, and I nearly lost everything. At the end of my using, I found myself homeless. My mother took my child from me. I lost my job. I lost everything. And, I had to go away. I had to be institutionalized because I couldn't do it on my own. And in there, I heard the message. Our message is hope and the promise of freedom that an addict, any addict, can lose the desire to use and find a new way to live. Mm-hmm. And that was the most beautiful thing I ever heard, you know, after staying clean for a couple of days. And a woman carried the message, and she told me to go to a meeting. And I didn't go to the meeting. But what did happen was, as I was walking down the streets one day, attempting to go use again, I saw some people standing in front of a church, and I saw a woman there that was using on a corner, and when she used hard, and she stood on a corner nodding, and that was a vision of hope for me when I saw her standing straight with a book in her hand, and her book was a basic text, and everybody had a book out there, and everybody was hugging, and she said, come over here. Said, I don't go to church. And she said, we're not doing church, just come here. And she said, okay. And she said, come inside. I said, no, I can't do that. I don't do the church thing. You're not doing no church thing, honey. You're going to the basement. She said, I'm going to give you some coffee, so you're not going in there anyway. So ever since then, I've been clean. I never had to do this twice. I hear people that do it, and I feel so bad, and it hurts me. It breaks my heart when I see people go out and don't come back. But I'm still here. I'm still here, you know. And I had to get sponsored, and I had to be guided, and I was afraid to open up to another human being. I had to get honest. I had to be really open-minded to the fact that another human being could possibly help me, you know, allow somebody else in my life in a way where I had to find trust in them, right? After coming from the streets and not trusting anybody to convert my life, to change this way, like that's like a miracle, right? Like, I never thought of the program, that there was something that existed this way, that just by living with some principles and some words, and just a book, because when I came, there was just that book. I didn't have all those other books, and I had to find, and I had to trust this person and get a sponsor and let them in and allow them to know who I was and what was going on in my life and have the courage enough to open up to them and tell them parts of my life that I never, ever would have shared with anybody, my deepest, darkest secrets, right? And some of my words might get tangled because I have a little accent, so please forgive me. And I'm hard of hearing. So trying to hear myself here. My husband tells me, speak into the mic. So I'm going to speak into the mic. You know, at the first three steps, I had to get a solid foundation, right? First three steps allowed me to get that foundation where it was strong enough. But when I got to the fourth step, I wasn't afraid because I heard people saying that it was the most beautiful thing that I had ever done for themselves. that their life had changed. And where I was at when I was on a third step was already beautiful. I felt life again. Like, I didn't have a God when I came in here. I was a little girl that none of that existed in my home, you know. And there was times where I envied the people that had that, because I didn't know how to receive that. I didn't know how to be open to that. And a sponsor guided me and showed me how to get to that point. Like, listen, just do what you're doing. I feel good. So how do you feel about what you do? I feel good. Let that spirit keep growing in you. And through that process, I was able to develop an understanding of something that was not known. It was like I couldn't touch it. I couldn't hold it, but I could feel it. And that was something that was new for me, because I didn't have any feelings when I came here. I didn't care about anybody, you know. And I became open-minded to that. I surrendered, you know, only after acceptance and surrender was I able to recover in this process. And the step here, when I got to the step, after looking at everything what I had, when I had did it, the step work, I didn't do it through the step working guide because that didn't even exist. They had written paperwork with questions and answers, and they would have the answers, and then they were constantly changing the questions. So I thought that the following year it would be the same question, and then they were like, no, we're not doing that again. They would change some of the stuff, and they would give us vocabulary words. And there's a part in the step working guide, because now I did it to the step working guide, you know, and the motivation, what motivated me, you know, was knowing that that there was benefits. There was benefits in doing this step. That the benefits that I was getting again, right? Because I had already done it. I knew what I had a glimpse. And the first time around, it wasn't the same like the times I had did it over and over again. Mm-hmm. And I realize now how important it was for me to open up. And there's always more being revealed, you know. I had to let go of resentments, you know. The guilt, the reservations. I had to let go of all of that. And there's still times in my recovery process where I can hold on to a resentment with somebody, but it has really nothing to do with me. It's something they're doing over there. And I have to just stay away from that. Like, I learned that, you know, even the people that come to me with their pain, and there's people that I love and they share with me the pain, and like, to separate yourself from knowing what the harm that somebody's doing to somebody, and to be in your place and just focus on what my job is as a sponsor. It's very hard when I know you're getting beat up and you're getting hurt. It's hard, you know, and I have to pray really hard. So my surrender, and I'm being honest, you know, in my fourth step this time to my sponsor, you know, it's really hard because I really love from my heart. I loved other people and I care for them so much, you know, and I learned that I can't take on people's grievances. I can't take on their pain. My job is just to guide them through the 12 step, you know, and simple as that. And that's their process, you know, and that I had my own process, and to remember when that I can't go there, that I have to continue to remember that sometimes my heart can be just as weak, as strong as it is, it can be just that weak because I just fall into that category. And it's hard sometimes to pull myself out of that. You know, finding out, you know, going ahead despite of my fear, right? I'm not afraid of going ahead and looking inside of myself anymore. I'm not afraid of who I am anymore. I know exactly who I am today, you know. Having courage to be honest, to have faith, to trust this process and trust my higher power, right, to give me whatever qualities I needed to walk through the process. That was what I needed, right? What do I need to walk through this process? And all I needed was a higher power. And you know something? I always say, there's no way I could have went to a fourth step without having a higher power. There's no way. Because my sponsor alone, right? When my sponsor's not there, I go to my higher power first. Whenever I'm in any situation, I go to my higher power first, because sometimes I don't want to reach out to my sponsor. And it's not because what I'm concerned about what my sponsor is going to say. It's because I still have those moments of defiancy. Well, I don't want to hear it. Well, I don't want to hear it. But if I go to my higher power first, I will get centered. I will get out of my self-centeredness. And I will get out of the way. And God will reveal to me, and I will, you know, my perspective would change and go in the direction that I need to go. You know, I would humble myself, right? I'll practice the humility that I need in the moment so I can get out of the way so I don't hurt nobody else. And I have to continue to take this inventory of myself and look at where I'm at. Look at these assets that I have, right? I have assets, and my assets tell me, go to your higher power, right? Well, once upon a time, I would say, you know what? I'm not calling my sponsor. Forget about God. That I'm not living like that today, you know? So that force, that higher power exists because when I go there, let me tell you something. I bypass my sponsor, and my sponsor says, you know, I'll call me. He said, you been okay? I said, well, yesterday I wasn't. Why didn't you call me? I said, I went to my higher power. Mm-hmm. He said, you know what? The sponsor would tell me, well, thank goodness, because I was working. You know, so it worked for me, and it worked for the sponsor, right? You know, a moral is what I used to discover my own individuality with my own values and my own principles, right? My perspective, right? Trust with my responsibilities, right? Being trustworthy, right? Being a person that you can trust, that you, you know, when a sponsee asks me to sponsor them, and I look at them, and my heart drops because I'm like, I'm not asking myself, and this has nothing to do with being I don't know if using the right word, cockiness, to say, you know, oh, they keep asking me. It's because they see something that they want. Because I know today my self-worth. I know who I am. I know where my heart is. I know what I have to give. I know how I'm living, right? I have integrity today. The people that know me, that are close to me, know how I live, and they know my truth. They know the woman that I am today, you know? And I'm a kind person, you know? And I wasn't always like that, you know? And I try to lead by example, right? Try to lead by example, right? Without perfection. You know, today I value myself. I have a good self-esteem about myself. You know, I'm dedicated to learning more because when I came into this fellowship, I didn't know, I didn't finish school. You know, I didn't finish school. I had to get my GED. I got my GED in 2020 as an adult. And my mother was a Spanish-speaking woman and she didn't speak no English. So it was really hard for me. My siblings, they don't have this accent that I have, you know. And they always talk about it because it was always an issue for me, you know, because it was made fun about it, you know. But today I'm okay with it, right? I'm okay with it. I take an inventory of myself in this fourth step, you know. This inventory is to be of myself, not of other people, right? It's of me, of myself, all leading to the part that I lead in the situations that took place in my life, whatever they were, right? Because I'm not going to sit here and tell you about my fourth step. That's not going to happen. But I can tell you what happens as a result of the process of working the fourth step. You know, what part did I play in all the situations that took place in my life, right? In the inventory, when I did the inventory process, I stayed close to my sponsor. And I asked my sponsor, said, let's pray together and let's pray that you can be very thorough in this fourth step. And let's pray that you can have the courage to tell me what it is that you wrote, you know, without going into a fifth step. But, you know, I had to find someone that was close and can help me, tell me to have the courage and pray for the courage to be fearless and be searching. I didn't know that I had to do that way. I thought that once you say the prayer in the beginning, then that's it. But what happened was, when I was writing in the fourth step, there came so many parts that kept bringing me back to that moment where I felt a lot of pain, especially the part where the abuse comes in. You know, I didn't even want to talk about that. And I said, can I kind of bypass that and just go to God with that one? You know, but the truth was, listen, the first time around, this is funny, but the first time around when I did a fourth step, I remember saying to myself, I'm just going to go to God, because I thought it was like I can make a choice, to God, to another human being, or myself. So I thought I had a choice. And I said, do I really have to go to another human being? I said, well, how are you going to get the help? You know what? God has revealed many other answers to me. Not all of this, he said, not all of the stuff you got here. There's too much, Lucy. And, you know, like, I did what I had to do. You know, I listed my resentments, you know, and my resentment list, you know, that helped me to reveal the patterns that kept me trapped in a cycle of fear, you know, a cycle of feeling rejected, feeling lonely, feelings of self-pity, you know, feelings of abandonment, those issues, right? Like, I needed to list the resentments that led to those feelings, you know, and I couldn't understand that, you know. A lot of it was a lot of the guilt and shame in my life came from the result of me doing what I had done to my daughter. I had abandoned my daughter, you know. I took my daughter to the cop spots. I was that mother. You know, she was between the double doors with me. At one time, they told me, she's here with a kid, get her out of here. And they took my money, and I was fighting with them. And I said, you know what, I'm going to call the cops if you don't give me my money back. Insanity. I was in great denial. I'm going to call the cops on the spot where I'm copping from. You know, and, you know, I did a lot of harm to a lot of people, you know, and especially to that one daughter, you know, and she's still a part of my life, you know, in a way that it's not very comfortable all the time, but she's still my daughter, and I still have to love her because I can't live the way I used to live. If I could love all of you guys, I have to love her, right? I don't want to say in spite of, I don't want to say all of that, because that's not even what I really feel, you know. I have to love her and continue to love her, because if I'm living this new way of life, God, my higher power wants me to live with love, love another person, be kind to myself, be kind to others, right? And give back. You guys told me to love her no matter what. Love her no matter what, right? And she could never say that I don't say I don't love her. She can never say that. She might say, oh, you don't do nothing for me when I do everything for her. But that's just the way it is, right? I have no fears about myself. I'm more concerned always more for my children and my family, my husband and my children. You know, like, I don't fear anything anymore, right? I'm not afraid of anything. I'm afraid of walking in the streets at night by myself. How about that? Right? Well, once I was... That was where I wanted to be, right? Today, that's where I'm afraid. I'm not afraid of anything. I'm not afraid of facing anything. I'm not afraid of sharing myself with my sponsor. I'm not afraid of that. I'm not afraid of, I have boundaries with my friends and relationships with the women and the sponsees. I'm not afraid of talking to them. You know, this fourth step has helped me to get to understand where once it was all a confusion and I had to write it down to get to the exact nature of my wrongs. Like, I'm not confused anymore. I'm not confused, right? To sort through the confusion and the contradictions of my life, right? To connect the dots, to find out what happened, what happened, get to the exact nature. And as I write this out, the defects of character are presenting themselves there, which, you know, then I have to carry that and work with that on the next step, right? And this is where the real Lucy, you know, stood up, right? I would say, with a real Lucy, please stand up. This is where I started to realize, like, who I really am. And even with the fighting, even me struggling, trying to fight with, like, you know what, but I don't, it's not that I don't want to give it up. It's that I don't think it's right, you know, but it doesn't matter, right? Because I have to be in a right space with a higher power, and I can't fight with my higher power. I can't fight with what God puts in front of me, you know? You know, I had to get somebody that really, really understood what they were doing on the other side when we were working with this stuff, right? And, you know, sex, you know, what is normal for me and identify my own values, principles, and morals, right, with my own sexuality, right, my own sexual preferences, right? You know, and the sex part, I thought it was going to be something different when I saw that book. I was like, okay. What is this here? And, you know, I had to sit down and understand, right? Like, when I came in here, you know, I was a tomboy. And I wanted to be a boy. I didn't want to be a girl, right? Because of the things that had happened to me. Because I didn't feel that I didn't want to be touched anymore. I didn't want to be touched by a man. Do not touch me. Stay away from me. Because of all the abuse, you know, that I had experienced, right? The physical abuse, right? I got beat up all the time by my, you know, by men. I got beat up, you know, and I just didn't want to be, I said, if I was a boy and I act tough, then that would change that, you know? And it did change for a little bit. But I was still out there causing chaos because I started a lot of that stuff, right? I looked at the part that I played in that, right? So, you know, the abuse part, you know, getting to the truth relieved the pain, and that's all I'm going to say about that. You know, the abuse was, it was just too deep, you know. That part of, that section of the step work was very painful for me. Thank you. You know, and, you know, I had to move on, and after doing the step work and know that, after doing that, I called my sponsor and I said, I'm finished with this. And even with that, I wasn't afraid to tell them. But what did happen was I was very emotional. It was so many emotions, especially this last time because it was deeper. Like my surrender was deeper. My honesty was deeper. Everything that I shared with my sponsor this time was more honest than it had ever been because there was a lot of stuff that, you know, my sponsor said, you never told me that. I said, because I wasn't ready. You know, and sure enough, but it had, there was stuff that I had written dots in the previous steps, but I just couldn't tell my sponsor yet. I was embarrassed. I was ashamed, you know. My sponsor, you know, is a person that supported me and understood what I was doing, and that helped me. That helped me out a lot to be able to be more open to the sponsor, you know, to have that courage, right? So one who, you know, he's a person that has understanding and understands the process that on his part, what he has to do to find out about me, you know, who has integrity and understood me. And you know what? Everything that that sponsor has given me back has been the truth. Matter of fact, has knows me better than I knew myself because there was some stuff that I knew, but I was afraid to say it. And the sponsor opened up and told me, this is what you're feeling. He said, you're right. And, you know, and I cried, and it was beautiful. It was the most wonderful experience ever, you know. My sponsor honors my feelings, you know, has compassion. And that's important to have a person like that in the fifth step because the fourth step is just the writing of it, right? The fifth step is not just the reading of the fourth step. In the fifth step, the sponsor is going to help, you know, help you find, the, you know, the help you to identify the defects of character, which I was already doing because I was writing them down as I was writing on the fourth step. And when I revealed them to my sponsor said, you don't own that. And here I thought it was a whole lot of bad stuff I had done. In reality, I had a lot of assets. This time I had a lot of assets, you know, because I always saying, I'm not going to add nobody else. I got to do a lot of work if I keep building resentments with people. Every time I go do my fourth step, you know, I said, next time I go around, I'm not going to have that many people. No. That's not going to happen no more because I'm living a program of recovery. If I'm living a program of recovery, then, you know, those things would change. It's not going to be that bad, you know. I always reaffirm my surrender with a prayer, you know, something reaffirming my surrender with a prayer when working on a fifth step, right, with my sponsor because, you know, the spiritual part of this program tells me that I need to remain, if I want to live a spiritual part of this program, then I have to go to a higher power, bring in a God to help me with that. And I didn't have that. And so my sponsor, I always tell my sponsor, please help me, continue to help me with this higher power. So every time that we do step work, we say a prayer in the beginning, we say a prayer in the middle of our writing, and we say a prayer at the ending. And let me tell you something, that works for me. Right, your higher power. I mean, your sponsor will work with you with whatever way works best for you, whatever is good for you. Some of my sponsees, I have to work with them a little differently because some, you know, understand it. You know, some. I have one sponsee that didn't write English, and she wrote it. She shared it into a recording, and I heard it back in Spanish. Right, because I could read Spanish, but not as, you know, sharp as she could. But I understood what she was writing. Like when she spoke, and I could understand her. And we did it that way, and that worked for us. And she's still been clean, this woman. And she's like in her 70s. And I think my time is up. You know, I just want to say, you know, I hope that I shared enough on the fourth and fifth step for you guys to understand if somebody got something out of it. And if nobody told you they love you today, I love you all. Thank you for being here.
I'd like to introduce our next speaker, Peter C.
I'm an addict recovering from the disease of addiction, and my name is Peter. Amen. First and foremost, I want to thank God for allowing me to be clean in the process of recovery called Narcotics Anonymous. And I want to thank Narcotics Anonymous for rescuing me from a life of dereliction, destruction, and despair. I'm an addict who's been clean for 29 years and 1 month today. But I share like I always share that just because I've been clean for that length of time, my predecessors have taught me that it doesn't mean that I've arrived. Because anytime I think I've arrived, at some point I gotta go. And just for today, there's no place I'd rather be here with all of you guys, sharing on the fourth and fifth step. First of all, listen, I want to thank my wife for sharing first, right? We've been together for 29 years, and we just celebrated our 25th wedding anniversary. She accepted me with my defects of character before I even knew what a defect of character was, right? But I truly believe that it's only through this step that I've been able to maintain, that we've been able to maintain this relationship, right? My home group, and it's possibly that's why they asked us to share, our home group is the Miracles Alive 4-Step Workshop, where we're always on the 4-Step. Every Friday night, if you're in Brooklyn and I'm in town, I'll be at my home group, right? The Living Clean talks about, and it talks about in the section of, like, understanding who we are, I think was the section. It talks about that it's through the step work process that we return time and time again to the scene of the crime. Yeah. But we've also learned here through the fifth step that once the caution tape goes up, we don't have to go back. Right? Understanding the fourth and fifth step process, the last 7 years, I've been going to that group most of my recovery, but the last 7 years I stood there, and the reason why I still parked there is because right around 22 years, it took me 22 years to realize how critical this step is to the recovery process, right? I mean, when I think about this step, I think about this is like the pinnacle of our recovery, right? Pinnacle means the high point, right? It's like the crescendo of an opera. Like when I think about it, these are the words that come to my mind, right? It's key. Like, if you confront this step, you got two choices. You're either going to go on to your rest of your recovery, or you're going to suffer clean, right? I think when it talks about, I study the literature, right? And it talks about here, it says that that those who do not do this critical step relapse. And I said, but wait a minute, there's a lot of people that don't do this step and they haven't relapsed. But what we're talking about here is not a relapse to the drugs necessarily, right? We have to expand on the way we view this literature, right? Yeah. We're talking about being clean, right? Mm-hmm. And still suffering, right? Crawled up in a fetal position, contemplating thoughts of suicide, right? And the reason why I say that is because I know what that feeling is like, right? When I got here, they said, they were slick, these guys that were here, right? I guess because there wasn't no literature, so they made up their own sayings, right? And they said that you was entering a journey with a destination you will never arrive at. A destination closer to God to develop the depth of character to become the person he intended me to be before I picked up that first one. I said, wow. That means in order for me to get that depth of character, first I have to understand who I am. Right? The second step is really about change. right? I mean, it's about a lot of things, but it's really about change. And this is what it does. To level set, it asks the most ridiculous question, right? It says, do you think it would be an insane act to walk up to somebody and ask them for a heart attack? Right? And you're like, man, that's a stupid question. But if you believe that's a stupid question, then there's hope for you yet. I mean, as funny as that sounds, that's really what it's doing. It's trying to see if that means, if that's wrong to you. If that's not wrong to you, then you got to keep coming. That's the bottom line there, right? But if that does not seem normal to you, right? Because we got to be careful here because, see, it talks about that we come in here with a distorted sense of proportion and that our perspective is off. So what's good is bad and what's bad is good. So we're doing a moral inventory and it says moral is not what you think is right or wrong, but what I think is right or wrong. It doesn't mean that it's right or wrong. It just means what I think might be right or wrong. Right? So it says we take stock of our assets and our liabilities. Obviously, we don't really think we have too many assets. We definitely know we got plenty of liabilities. And the assets that we think we got is things like manipulation, conniving, slick, witty, right? Because that's how we come in here. We come in here thinking that we really got it on going on, but the reality, we're legends in our own mind. That's why the fifth step says the mask must come off, right? It says, what's the statement? It says we can begin to stop being the person we have invented, right, Nathan? I'm no longer the man. I'm no longer the legend in my own mind. It says the only one that thought that was the legend was me. So I take stock of my assets and my liability, right? I've been fortunate. I've done a four step through the working step for Narcotics Anonymous. I've done a four step through the step working guy. I have sponsees. I have some guys that really need a lot of help. So I've made a version of both books put together because I needed all the ammunition. You know what I'm saying? I mean, listen, that's why it's important that you get honest with your sponsor so he could know who you are. It talks about here, honesty is the key to the fifth step, but it's also the key to the fourth step. Because fourth step and fifth step talks about honesty at a different level. Honesty version 2.0, which is self-honesty. Because we're great ones for manipulating the truth. We're masters at self-deception. I could tell you that I was a passenger in the airplane until I start telling you that I was the pilot of the airplane, right? Because that's how we are. Like, I believe the lies I tell myself. I had a sponsee one time that told so many lies that when he got to his fourth step, he came up to me, he was crying. I said, what's the matter? He said, I don't even know what the truth is anymore. And he went back out. He hasn't been back since. I'm talking about this like 20 years ago, right? So it's important that you get honest from the get-go. And if you're not being honest right now, I'm here to tell you that you need to get honest in order to recover. We used to say, when I got here, they gave me a coin. I used to keep it in my pocket, and it said, to thy own self be true. Right? And we didn't coin that phrase. That's a Shakespearean phrase. It came from the other fellowship, but we used to say that all the time here. Right? And that kind of resonated in me because I realized that I need to be honest here if I'm going to be able to recover here. Right? So if I'm going to change, I need to identify what it is I need to change. I don't know what I need to change yet, so I need to write everything. That's the reality, right? I'm fortunate I came in my 20s. I used for a short period of time, but I realized that although I could tolerate great physical pain, I could not tolerate emotional pain. Right? I always shared that I used for 13 years of my life. For 13 years of my life, I was in pain, but I called it pleasure. Right? Because I thought that using was fun. Until some point, right, the third step talks about the euphoria began to wear off and the ugly side of addiction emerged. But since I get comfortable in the uncomfortable, I thought I had normalized that behavior and I thought there was nothing wrong. Right? So I come in here, I'm going to write everything. Some people even use the autobiography. By the way, whatever method your sponsor tells you to do it is the right way. It says the only wrong way to do it is to make up your own way to do it. Right? I mean, this is the reality here. So I'm not going to say what's right or wrong. I'm just going to share my experience of what I know and how I've interpreted this step throughout the years. Which, by the way, and I was just talking to James earlier, a lot of this stuff is dependent on my spiritual condition. Yeah. Right? Yeah. So I shared on the fourth and fifth step when I had 18 months clean at my first convention. And 20 years went by, and I don't know what made me say, you know, well, let me buy this thing to put this cassette tape in it to hear it, because I didn't have a cassette player anymore, but I found the tape. And it had the date that my sponsor gave it to me. It was November 18, 1995. So I've been with him since that time, okay? So I listened to it, and I was shocked to the stuff that I said back then. Because some of that stuff I won't say today. Not because I'm embarrassed, I just feel it's inappropriate, that's number one. And two, I've made peace with a lot of this stuff, right? That's why it says here in the step working guide, I love this phrase that it says here in the step working guide. It says, many of our members with clean time have shared that an inventory taken in later recovery revealed that their addiction had spread its tentacles so completely through their lives that virtually left no area untouched. That means I have a difficult time enough remember what I ate for breakfast this morning. Can you imagine being here 10 years and try to remember what happened 10 years ago or prior to that before I came here, right? But the reality is, if I got 29 years of recovery and some of these things happened when I was 8 years old, right? That means that if I'm allowing these things to happen 49 years ago, hold me hostage, just the thought of that is like ridiculous, right? It talks about I don't want to be a lifelong victim of my past. I want to figure out the the patterns of behaviors and systems of belief to get to the exact nature of who I really am. Right? We talk about uncover to recover to discover. Right? Uncover to discover to recover. Right? I need to know who I am in order to change that person so I could get to assimilate my higher power in the 11th step later on. I don't know that yet. But that's the end goal here. The end goal here is to be as close to my higher power as I can. And the only way I could do that, at least right now, is through the spiritual principles. That's why you need that foundation here. The Living Clean talks about that we're building skyscrapers inside of the rooms of Narcotics Anonymous. But we can't build skyscrapers on a shaky foundation. In order to build a skyscraper, you need to build a solid foundation. So in the event you get cracks in that foundation, you're able to apply some of the spiritual mortar that you've accumulated here through the recovery process so you can shore up the foundation. The fifth step talks about that if you expect the steps to numb you, then you're expecting it to do the same thing that the drugs did for a very long time. It says we're going to ease the pain of living through spiritual principle. It doesn't say we're going to eliminate it. It says ease the pain. None of it is going to be more than you can bear and more than you can handle. That's why your higher power will only allow you to see what you're spiritually fit to see at the time that you're going through this inventory process. That's why this inventory process is meant to be done over and over again. Right? So, and I don't have enough, this is a lengthy process, obviously you can't capture it in 25 or even 50 minutes, right? But once you've written this inventory, right, and you got it all down on paper, now you need to share it, it said, right? And you don't get a choice, Lucy said you get a choice, that was funny. You don't get a choice, right? It says we admit to God, to ourselves, another human being. Why do we admit to God? He already knows, it says, right? Because this is a spiritual program. And we're trying to get in touch with our spirituality here, which is going to seem foreign and unusual. Praying, when I started praying, all I could say was, thank you, God. And the prayer starts developing as you put in the willingness and the effort to pray. Now some of the prayers are so lengthy, I just go to sleep. by the end of the prayer. But I need that tool because that's the tool that's going to help me quiet the mind, as step 11 it talks about. I learned that it's there for a reason. I need something to quiet the mind because there's still noise in my head. And I need to keep that noise at bay. So I like the statement that it says that we're doing a surgery of the spirit. But in order to do a surgery of the spirit, right, because I visualize things, I said to myself, well, then I need a spiritual surgical team. And in that spiritual surgical team, I have my higher power, my sponsor, and my network, which might consist of my sponsees. I got sponsees where we have like real talk conversations. I don't even feel like I'm the sponsor. He calls me sponsor, but I feel like we're at a level playing field here once you do step work, man. It talks about the therapeutic value of one addict helping another, right? It says, even though it says the heart of NA beats, it doesn't say the sponsorship is the heartbeat of the program. What it means is when two addicts share their recovery, the heart of NA beats, and an example of that is sponsorship, yeah. Right? A word that my son gave me when he got clean in 2016 was symbiotic. When two organisms rely on each other for survival. I never forget that word. It describes the relationship, right? And I realized that after decades of being here, when my sponsor's mother passed away, the role switched because I lost my mother on my first year. And then I understood what he told me when he said, pay attention to everything I have to say because you never know when you have to give it back.
That's right.
And I said, wow, man, you know, I was like this. I want to give something back. I want to give something back. Because the love that sponsorship pours into you, right? You don't realize it. They don't get paid, right? They don't get a stipend. They don't get nothing, right? I don't get nothing, right? But I spend a lot of time. You relapse, go to detox, relapse again, go to detox, relapse again, go to detox. Who's an addict again? Go back. Who's an addict? You know, we do it without conditions, right? And as we see the addict come to life, it talks about in our program, right? It says when the drugs go and the addict works the program, lost dreams awaken, new possibilities arise. People always say the second part of that, but it's the first part that's critical to the recovery process. If you don't come in here and do the work, yeah, you might stay clean. You know what I learned? You see the symbol here? Any part of the symbol can keep you clean. But only through when you put them all into perspective can you get the highest point of freedom. So the question is, how free do you want to be? Right? That's the question, right? It says after being here for a while, we run the risk of assuming control of our life all over again. We think we know something, and we learn, you know, I did the 12 steps, I know something. But there's a necessary ingredient there that you have to put. It's called time. Our literature talks about time being our most precious commodity. And with that time and with that step work, right, and the listener, there's another key part. Your listener must be able to have the insight, it says. This is not an intellectual program, but you can't help me if you don't have the insight. You need somebody with insight. So it is possible to outgrow your sponsor and time to move on. If you want to grow, then you got to go. I just made that up. But it's the truth, right? I mean, you know, if you want to get free, right? Then you gotta go. We're not married here. If you're fortunate enough to have long-term relationships like I have with my sponsor, my relationship is so long with my sponsor that when I accidentally say the wrong thing, he goes, no, that's not how it went. And he tells me the truth. And it's not that I try to lie. I forgot some things, but he hasn't. So he calls me out on this stuff. You know what I'm saying? So if you got a listener that's able to provide you some insight, right? As a matter of fact, I think it's even better when I listen to the person and ask the right questions and he comes up with his own answer, right? When you can come up with your own answers, that's when really this process starts to take on a whole new depth, right? Because you really understand You can no longer, it says we can no longer blame people, places, and things. That's why it's important to have somebody with insight. Otherwise, you'll be manipulating and scheming the listener. I'm telling you, that's the way it is. It says it here. I didn't make it up, right? All right. How much time I got? Oh, 10 minutes.
8 minutes.
Oh, 8 minutes. I'm trying to get an extra two. All right, so listen. So relationships, right? Critical here, right? It talks about, don't only look at the sexual ones, look at the platonic ones. Why? Because the reality is, if you have a sexual relationship with someone and you stay with them for 30 years, at some point, that euphoria begins to wear off, right? So what's going to sustain that relationship for a long period of time, right? Love has to be at the root of our relationships. Because when I love you, there is no disagreement, right? When it's love inserted into the equation, no matter what you do, you can't do no wrong, right? That's the love that we talk about in the 12th step, the unconditional love. And if you don't know what that is, let me give you an example. It's the same love that a mother expresses to a child. The same love that a child expresses to the mother. That means that I don't love you in spite of who you are. I love you for who you are, with all your blemishes and defects, right? And when you start experiencing that love, you're less likely to intentionally want to hurt other people. Right? And when you go to my home group, that gives me the ability to give everybody a hug. I joke around sometimes. I say, you get a hug, you get a hug. Everybody gets a hug, right? And the reason why I say that is because I no longer have a predisposed notion of who you are based on what you look like. I'm not judging you by your appearance, by what you dress, how many tattoos you got, how long your hair is, the color of your skin. Because I know that if you're in the rooms of Narcotics Anonymous, you're here because you have hurt and suffered like I have hurt and suffered. Right? Because I understand that there's some things that we have gone through. Like, everybody got a trauma story here. Yeah. Right? Understand that. Everybody got a trauma story here. But there's one thing that you can't do about your past. And it's changing. You can't change your past. Right? And when we respond to the future with fear, sometimes it paralyzes us and it stops us to be the best version that I can be. We were just talking about that too, right? Why am I able to achieve certain things? Because I'm not letting fear blocking me and stopping me. I don't want to be caught up in the what ifs, if only, if just one more that it talks about in Who's an Addict. Because I can do that through my career. I can do that throughout my life. And then live in regrets and never achieve things beyond my wildest dreams. There was a guy I remember about 10 years ago. He had 30 years clean. He said, you know, I'm broke, but I'm spiritual. 5 minutes. You know, before he gave her the 5 minutes, she actually took the 5 minutes. I said, man, she took the 5 minutes. He said, I'm broke, but I'm spiritual. And I said, that can't be our message. And what happened was, he had 30 years clean, and he had a lot of sponsees, but he stopped talking about his problem, which was a gambling addiction. And he lived upstairs, and downstairs there was a bodega, because I'm from Brooklyn, and we have bodegas. He lived upstairs in an apartment, and downstairs was a bodega, and in the back of the bodega was a Joker poker machine that was still ravaging his life. So yeah, he was broke. And he thought he was feeling spiritual. But the reality is, you can be here, think you're feeling spiritual, and be duped by the disease with clean time. Right? You can think that you're experiencing long periods of serenity that it talks about in the 10th step. You can think that. You can say, well, I'm good. Really? Are you good? So how do you know when this, the difference between when it's time to do a 4th step and when it's time to do a 10th step? Right? Because that's like the question, right? Like, this is the $64,000 question. These guys just told me how old they are, right? So the answer to that question, from what I believe, is if I do a new mistake, That's fine. I could put a 10th step on that. But if I'm repeating the same mistake, expecting different results over and over again, through my relationships especially, because that's one of the ways it manifests itself, then I say it's like ragu spaghetti sauce. It's in there. There's something you missed in that inventory process, and maybe it's time to do another 4-step, right? So listen, I'm grateful for the opportunity for the committee. I'm grateful to be asked to share on a step that I really am passionate about, and understand that this thing that we're doing here, right? You know, here's the crazy thing, too. I know it's late and all of that. That's fine. It's Friday night and all that. But this room should be packed. This room, and that's fine, because you guys got something that they didn't get. They're going to have to keep coming, right? But the truth is that this step, right, the third step talks about it will revolutionize your existence, right? But that's not a standalone statement, right? It's the recovery process that will revolutionize your existence, right? And if you're here and you've gone through the 12 steps, I'm here to tell you that there's levels here and there's stages. And unless you've gone through it multiple times, you're never going to experience that. I'm an addict. My name is Peter. Thank you for letting me share.